The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Welcome to Unlikable Female Characters, the podcast featuring feminist thriller writers in conversation about female characters who don't give a damn if you like them. I'm Lane Fargo, and I'm here with Kristen LaBianca.
Hello.
And Wendy Hurd.
Hello.
And I want everyone to know that it's been very difficult for us to record this episode because Mercury retrograde was like kicking our asses this morning. It's like our fourth attempt.
It's very serious. Like anyone who's like, astrology isn't real, like, fuck you. Yeah, it is. Mercury retrograde.
It fucking is. But we're here and hopefully this is working. Yes. I guess we'll find out. So how are y'all? What's going on in your lives?
Well, today I am celebrating my cat Snapple's gotcha day. 17 years ago, she came to live with me. She was 4 months old at the time. She's an old lady, fairly sweet, also very sassy. It's just kind of crazy that, like, I got her, like, as a 20th birthday present. So, like, I was, like, not even a real person yet.
Wow.
You were like, just a kid.
Yeah. Just like, a kid. Wild to think about that I've literally had this cat for my entire adult life, like, since before I was even an adult. It's pretty wild.
Aw. She's so cute.
She's a sweet girl.
What did you do to celebrate her gotcha day?
We gave her some bacon. For breakfast, which was very exciting for her. And there might be some chicken in her future.
What a day.
Yes.
You didn't buy her like any like cardboard ships this time.
So they had some Christmas related cardboard structures. We still have one of those up. It's like a stack of presents. It's very cute. And it like looks ridiculous in our house now because it's like February. But, you know. Target does have some extremely cute Valentine's Day cardboard structures, and they also have currently a cat scratcher taco truck.
Ooh.
That I'm just like, oh my. And it's called like, it says like, what does it say on it? Oh crap, I forget. I have to look it up. I'll look it up and I'll tell you later.
Like taco cat or something?
No, it says like, oh my god. It's seriously so funny. I'm going to look it up right now.
Okay, look it up.
Wendy, what's new with you?
Okay, so keeping it pet related, today's the 1 month anniversary of getting my puppy.
Aww.
And she, you know, when I got her a month ago, she was afraid of absolutely everything. She had been, her only life experience had been on a chain. She had only been on a chain, that's it, in a backyard, and clearly wasn't being fed enough. So she was just like, you know, when dogs kind of crawl around on their belly, like toward you, like they're scared you're going to kill them, but they like you. It's like that. It was like that all the time. She was like always crawling around on her belly, like afraid. Anyone who came over, she would just freak out barking. Everything was like a dog killing machine inside the house because she'd never been in a house. Like it's a whole thing. And now she's so much more comfortable and she's running around like a little dog terrorist. And she ran last night. My friend came over with her dog to socialize, and she ran up to my friend and like jumped on her and was licking her like a normal dog. And I was so happy. So she's still afraid of the leash, but she can go on it for a little bit. Like she can tolerate it a little and stuff like that. So come a long way. We're getting there.
That's good. Kristen, did you find the taco truck?
I did. It says meow delicioso.
Oh, that's good. We all needed that.
Yeah.
Well, I don't really have any pet related updates except that on the day we're recording this, it is cold as fuck in Chicago. It's like -5 and then like wind chill. And my dog is very unhappy and just like does not want to go outside, which can you blame him? I don't want to go outside either. So I make my partner take him out.
How does he go to the bathroom like that? Like, how does it work?
He usually just like goes really fast because then he like runs back inside.
Does he poop in the snow and then you have to dig it out of the snow?
Yeah, he likes to like poop up on a snowbank and then it kind of like he like runs out of a room and the poop is like touching him. It's so gross. I'm like, why are you doing this to yourself?
Animals are so gross and so great. Also, it's like
dogs are disgusting. He's very strange. He likes to like poop like on a tree or like under a bush or like he's very strange.
Mine's like that too. He likes to only pee on something or poop under something. Like
this is clearly the content that people listen to unlikable female characters for. I guess my other life update, not pet poop related, is my partner is going back to work in a few weeks. He got like the date that his furlough ends, and I think it's just a few weeks from now. I think I can make it without murdering him. I think by the time this episode airs, actually, he'll be back to work, so we'll like know if I murdered him or not. Like if there'll be an update on the Twitter, like Lane's going to jail for murder, or
so this may be your last episode because you may be in jail, but hopefully not.
Suspense, keep him in suspense. But it's actually, he's going back to work like right after our 15th anniversary. And when he told me, I was like, this is all I wanted for our anniversary. Thank you. And he was like, I know. Yeah, that makes sense. That seems right. So, happy anniversary, honey. I hope you're still alive when you're, when this comes out so you can listen to it. okay. So our topic today, we are going to do a deep dive into a single work of art. We're going to talk about the movie Promising Young Woman.
I'm like devastated. I don't know what to say. It ruined me.
Oh my God. I know. Like it ended and I was just like bawling.
I was crying. And that doesn't happen to me very much.
No, I agree. Like I'm not like, I cry at movies all the time. Like I rarely do, but it just killed me. So powerful.
So first of all, if you have not seen this movie, we will be revealing some spoilers, but we're going to wait until later in the episode and we'll give you like a big spoiler alert when you should turn the episode off if you have not seen the movie yet. For the first part, we're just going to kind of talk about it like in more general terms. And so you can listen if you want, and you should definitely check this movie out. It's available right now to rent for, it's like one of those early release ones where it's like $20, but I'm assuming in a month or two, the price will come down. This movie was supposed to come out, last March or April or something? And then March. It kept getting delayed because of the pandemic. And so I had read a lot about it before, because it was at, like, film festivals and stuff, so people had seen it. And I'd read a lot about it and was kind of, like, waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for it to come out. And it was kind of nice to get to watch it at home, because I agree, it is, like, it's very emotional. For any woman watching that movie, you're going to, like, feel some shit. And it was kind of nice to be home instead of at a theater. But
it was also nice to be able to fast forward through things. Like, there were certain things I couldn't watch that if I had been in a theater, I would have, like, had to close my eyes or put my hands over my ears. And, like, just to be able to feel more in control of those, like, triggering moments where you just push forward 15 seconds. Like, it's fine. You don't have to watch that part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for anyone who is not familiar, although I feel like the people who listen to this podcast probably are also very aware of this movie. There's so much. This is like the official unlikable female characters movie of the year, maybe the century. So it is about Cassie, played by Carey Mulligan, who used to be a medical student and dropped out years prior after her best friend was raped and then committed suicide. And so Cassie's been like that really divided her life into before and after, and she dropped out of school and since then has started engaging in a unique form of revenge, which is she gets all dressed up and goes out to a nightclub and pretends to be completely wasted, like can't even stand up straight, and waits for a guy to pick her up. And then she reveals that she's actually sober and gives him quite a lesson. So she's teaching these guys who think that they're nice guys that they're actually fucking pieces of shit, and we love to see it.
Yes, and it's so great the way she does it. She'll like go home with them and she's sort of doing this like I'm drunk and I don't know what's going on act, and then like all of a sudden she just like switches it off and she's stone cold sober, and they are so freaked out. They're like, wait, are you sober? And it's just like It's so fantastic.
It's very satisfying. Very satisfying. Although, as watching this movie as someone who wrote a book about a woman who kills rapists, the whole time I was a little bit like, why not just murder them? Like, mm-hmm. are we sure they're really learning the lesson that they need to? Like, if they were dead, they would learn a lot more, I think.
I was worried for her a lot because she would do that. And then I'd be like, yeah, but what if he just now, like, rapes you for real? Like,
yeah,
you know.
She's certainly putting herself in a dangerous situation, but it's yes. like this more extreme version of, you know, when women are told like, oh, you got raped because you, you know, you wore a short skirt and you went out alone and you weren't careful and like all of that.
Yeah.
It's like taking that to this extreme.
So I think it's, I think something interesting about it is like Lane, you're saying, why doesn't she just murder them? And like, that is a valid question.
Like kind of joking, but not really.
But I think that like, you know, part of it is that like she, it's like she isn't just wanting to like, it's like, it's like a different kind of revenge that she is sort of
yeah.
taking. Mm-hmm. Like it's a, she wants them to just, she wants them to feel like fucked up forever about
yeah
this moment.
Yes.
So it's like this very like, you know, she is, it's like a psychological revenge, which is different from a lot of revenge stories and is interesting. But it also does, I think, a really good job of sort of showing the psychological effects on Cassie of going to these dark places. Like it's obviously like she's obviously not in a good place. And part of yeah. that is because like, you know, she's gone through this tragedy. Her whole life is just messed up because of what happened to her friend. But like, I'm thinking of this moment where after she has, after she has done some revenging activity, she's like sitting in her car and this like in traffic, like she's sitting in her car on the road and some person pulls up behind her and she's not moving and he's yelling at her and she's just like sitting there and you can just see that she is completely shut down. And mm-hmm. then like she gets out of the car and attacks this man's truck with a bat. And it's like, it's not one of those like, oh yeah, kick his ass girl moments. It's like obviously a very dark and emotional and disturbing place for her to be that she's doing this. And yeah. I think that's really different from a lot of the kind of revenge fantasy movies that are out there.
Yeah. And I felt like that moment in particular, it reminded me of this, all this thing in the movie did so well, which is to really show the like cacophony of voices around her all the time. Like she's walking down the street and guys are yelling at her. She's driving down the street and this guy is at her. Like there's yeah. just like this, it gives you this sort of just like deafening roar of this background noise of rape culture, you know, yes. just like mm-hmm. it did that so well.
And it also really does a good job of like, you know, her, she is a very unnerving person. Like that's her whole goal is to unnerve these men. And like early in the movie, she's walking down the street and some construction mm-hmm. workers are yelling at her. And she just like turns and stares at them until they like mm-hmm. they keep yelling and then they're kind of like, what's going on? And then like,
F you, blah, blah, yeah. blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it's just like
insulting her.
Right. Yeah. She's just like, she's very emotionally shut down for so much of it. And I think that the way that Carey Mulligan plays that is so devastating because you can just feel like everything that she's been through and the way that it makes her react to this.
She's fantastic in this. She just, you can see the rage and the like so much going on under the surface and all she's doing is like staring at these guys or it's like she's never reacting the way that these men expect her mm-hmm. to react
yeah.
in any situation. She's just sort of like there's a moment, so there's sort of a subplot where she starts dating this guy who she knew back in med school and he comes into the coffee shop where she works and says something that kind of upsets her and then he's like, I'm so sorry. Like, you can spit in my coffee if you want. And he's clearly joking. He's like that. She just fucking does it. She just like stares at him and spits in his coffee. And he's like, oh, okay. Like she just takes it to that extreme. But he still wants to go out with her. So I don't know.
Right. Right. And that's kind of like, it's, you know, in these interactions where she's gone home with these guys who think that she's completely drunk, like in one of the scenes she has like lipstick smeared all over her yeah. mouth and these men are constantly just like, you're so pretty. You know, yeah. like that's specifically what they say to her because, you know, these men they don't care if you've got lipstick smeared all over your face or if you literally just spat in their coffee. Like, they still want to go out with you.
Can we take a moment for that? The writer guy with the lipstick spearing scene. I was like, I wish three of us were watching that together. Because first of all, he's doing coke. He's talking about his book. And he says, it's talking about how tough it is to be a guy in the world. It's just a gritty love story. It takes place over a single night. You know what? I don't want to jinx it. And then he tries to get her to do coke and she's like, no. And then he starts like getting ready to sexually assault her while she's passed out. And then when she pulls it on him, I'm just like, this is the best thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, from the minute where he's like, my novel that I've been working on, I'm like, fuck you.
Yeah.
There was like this interesting moment. He said something, I'm trying to remember what it was, where he was like, oh, the makeup. He was like, why do you girls wear stuff like this?
Yeah.
No, we don't. We like to see you. You're beautiful without it. And it was like a whole like, oh my God.
It made me think of the Vain Woman episode that we actually just did.
Yeah. And he said it's the patriarchy. It's fucked up. They really mess with you. Like, the patriarchy makes you wear this. It sucks, man. Like, he says that. And then he, like, goes on to then assault her.
Right.
And the before that scene, she, like, when she's doing her makeup, right, she's watching this YouTube video about how to, like, create blowjob lips. So she does the makeup and then she smears it like purposely as part of her
drunk
costume.
Girl, yeah.
But did y'all read? So Carrie Mulligan gave this amazing interview, I think, to the New York Times, where she talks a lot about like Hollywood bullshit, like the thing where in scripts it always says, you know, she's beautiful, but she doesn't know it, and like all this stuff. And then she called out this critic. She was like, you know, reviews don't usually get to me, but this one did. There's this critic for Variety, I believe, who basically said it was like an overall positive review of the movie, but he basically said he didn't think Carrie Mulligan was hot enough to get all of these men to like pick her up. And she was like, what the fuck? Because I went and read it, and the guy was like, she seems like an odd casting choice, and you know, Margot Robbie was a producer on this movie, and I wonder if it was originally meant for her. Like,
it's just like absolutely seeing red. Like, oh my God.
Yeah. I was glad she called him out, because that is some bullshit. Like, there's so much going on there. I can't even, like, first of all, to imply that Carrie Mulligan is not incredibly gorgeous, which she obviously is, but this idea of like, well, if she was more beautiful, more men would want to rape her. Like, like, it has anything to do with it. Oh my God.
Well, what's really interesting about that is that I read that the reviewer who wrote that is actually a gay man. So it's like this sort of thing is so, it's like so entrenched in everything that everyone believes. That like even someone who's like not evaluating her in terms of her, would I fuck her? You know, like, even someone who is looking at it from sort of a remove from that picks up on this idea of like, you know, of sex and rape somehow being about, well, rape being about sex, first of all, and that being about, you know, attractiveness. Like, it's just it's so fucked up.
Like, assault or harassment is a compliment.
Right.
You're so beautiful. Like, fuck off.
I remember at a job I had many years ago, someone was talking about like, oh, you have to be careful when you go out to a bar and cover your drink and make sure no one puts anything in it. And there was this one coworker that I had who was like, she said, like, no one's ever tried to date rape me, in a way of like, I'm offended that no one has ever tried to do that. Am I not cute enough? God. It was just I cannot even believe a woman would say that. But of course, like, this stuff is so deep in our culture that, like, of course, you know, a woman can internalize that kind of message and just like sort of say it so casually at work. Come on.
Yeah. Wow.
And I actually felt like she was an important casting choice because of this, because I do think they did a really good job of showing, like, if you fit this certain model of beauty, you will get harassed and messed with for your entire fuckable life that will end at 38. But
as we know,
you literally will not be able to walk down the street. You will not be able to be safe in any place, because guys will think it's almost a compliment to you to assault and harass you everywhere you go. Mm-hmm. And if you don't take it as a compliment, they are angry, they are offended, they have bestowed something upon you. You're supposed to be flattered. And they just did such a good job with that, I think. And like, that's why I felt like she was a good casting choice, because she's really thin, like very thin. She's very blonde. She's very tan. She's very pretty, you know, and it's just like, I don't know. I felt like that was good and important.
Yeah, she does look a little more like a normal person than some women in Hollywood, which I think was an interesting choice as well. But it's yeah, to imply that, like, oh, these men wouldn't fall for it because she's not hot enough, like, completely misses the point of absolutely everything. Like, yeah. I can't.
Yeah, it's unreal.
So there was this other really interesting quote from that interview that Carey Mulligan said, which is, I'll just read it. So she says, Cassie has every right to be as closed down, as abrasive, as unpleasant, as vindictive as she likes because she's been through hell. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't care about her. I thought that was really, I mean, that's kind of what we talk about all the time on this show, right? It's like, even if a woman is, I mean, first of all, it's like she has reasons for being this way. Like, it's not like she's just being a bitch for no reason, like she, although we support that also, being a bitch for no reason, to be clear, but like she has things in her past that are causing her to act this way, and even if she's doing quote unquote unlikable things, it doesn't mean that we don't sympathize with her and like have human feelings towards her plight, right?
Well, yeah, I think that she is, like, she's definitely, you know, abrasive and like difficult, but she is an extremely like root forable character. Yes. The entire way through.
Yes, you want her to succeed. And you also kind of, I feel like there's this element of, I mean, she's really made her whole life about this. And there's a part of you that wants her to, like, leave it behind and, like, be happy. But you can see why she can't. Like, there's a great scene between her and Molly Shannon plays the mother of her, her friend who killed herself. And she basically says to Cassie, like, you're just like hurting yourself now. You need to let this go. This isn't what your friend would have wanted for your life. And I kind of felt that way as a viewer too. It's like, you care about her and you just want her to be happy, but you totally understand why she can't let it go. Right. Like, she is definitely a woman who can't let it go.
Yeah, for sure. She's like the ultimate woman who can't let it go.
I feel like it's so unfair. I understand her perspective. It's like, we can't just let these go. We can't just let these go. We have to stop letting these go. Like, that urgency she feels, I thought, was communicated so well.
Mm-hmm. I read another really interesting piece on this movie in The Mary Sue, which was talking about how women are discouraged for, like, seeking revenge or even justice for themselves. But if they're seeking it on behalf of friend or like someone else, I mean, we talked about this in some of our previous episodes, these revenge narratives where it's like her child was killed or like something happened to someone else, and we can sympathize with that more than a woman trying to get revenge on her own behalf.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're supposed to, as women, like, care more about other people than about ourselves. Yeah. Which is some bullshit as well. Yeah. But
yes,
that is an interesting thing in this film, is like her revenge is all about this thing that happened to her friend, which had a very real impact on her as a person, but it's ultimately about what was done to her friend. And that's why she's so obsessed with revenge.
Yeah, it's funny. Our conversation about this, it makes me so angry about the idea of likability, that you can be a person who has been through such hell and you can be a person who's just been through such terrible things, and that you can be such a complex and multi-layered person, and people will just ask themselves, but is she likable? Like, it's such a, it's so maddening. It makes me so angry, like, to think about those two things together.
Well, it's almost like the complexity that we find so compelling is, like, automatically what other people interpret as, this is too difficult to process. I'm going to lump it into this category of, like, I don't like her. I can't figure her out. Yeah. I don't get her. Something's going on there.
You got to be likable and you got to be fuckable, even while you're...
As long as you can. So my question is, now that I'm no longer, now that I've passed my last day, do...
Your last fuckable day.
Yeah. Now that that's over, do I still have to also be likable? I think I do, right? I have to, even though...
Of course. Okay, obviously. Of course.
And even though no one would deign to fuck you, you still have to try to make them want to, even though it's hopeless.
Right. But it's pathetic, too, if you try to make them want to.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it has to be effortless.
I have to effortlessly try to make them want me, even though it's impossible because I've passed my last day.
Yes.
And I have to be nice while I'm doing it and not resent it and enjoy it, but not too much.
You nailed it.
Okay.
There you go. Figured it out.
Thank you.
Well, Kristen, you recently had a birthday. You only have one last year of fuckability.
Yes,
like,
one more year of fuckability until I have joined the old crone club with you, Wendy.
The rivulets of cellulite on your thighs are forming. Never have I heard a description of a woman's body that made me so grossed out. I was like, wow. I mean, cellulite's really not that big of a deal, man.
No.
Like, it's on everybody. You know that, right? Like, guys have it, too. It's really
also
not
like,
that big
like
of a deal.
Rivulets? Like, that doesn't even make sense. Like, it's like beads of fat just sticking to your skin.
I
no,
think it's like,
dude.
You know, when it rains and the there become these like little pathways in the dirt. And so the dirt separates into all these different like chunks.
Okay. Okay. Bringing it back to the movie.
Sorry, that was my fault.
No, it's okay. We're always here to talk about
the rivulets
of cellulite and make fun of AJ Finn. So.
Yes.
Really, like, why
is that
podcast
not
exists.
What the podcast is for?
It is. I mean, yes. So I know we wanted to talk about some of the other female characters in this movie. I just mentioned Molly Shannon plays the mom of Cassie's friend Nina. But there's some other really interesting,
yeah,
like genuinely unlikable female characters.
Yeah, big time.
Feel a lot of things. So why don't we talk about them? And I think this will get like maybe slightly spoilery, but we're still not going to spoil anything huge, and we promise we're going to warn you before that happens. So this is just like minor spoilers.
The thing I found interesting about these female characters was like what we learned from this movie is if you fight the patriarchy, you're bad, but if you go along with the patriarchy, you're also bad. So
right. there's like you really can't win. I think it's really interesting. So one of the women played by Alison Brie is like another a woman who was one of the other medical students at the time, who was like loosely in, like Cassie was kind of friends with her. Like it didn't seem like they were ever super close, mm-hmm. but they were friendly and they were certainly like they knew each other well. and it's like heavily implied that Alison Brie's character did not believe Nina's story and sort of she takes this stance of like, you know, well, she was getting drunk all the time. What did she expect to happen? So she kind of has this, oh, she was asking for it stance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really interesting that in Cassie's revenge arc, she starts there. She starts with Alison Brie as like
the
first person that she wants to like enact this vengeance on.
Yeah, she has a step-by-step revenge plan,
yes.
and it does start there.
Yes.
And Allison's character is also, she's portrayed as kind of a mean girl. Like, her name is Madison. She seems like kind of that, like, rich bitch, stuck-up, mm-hmm. popular girl type like, you can kind of see that they never got along in med school, but she was part of this whole, you know, women can be part of rape culture, too, and
right.
I thought that was...
Yeah.
like a huge part of it, and we really prop it up sometimes.
Yes.
That's what I saw in her character is like she knew what happened, and almost to keep her own sanity or her own status or whatever, she had to convince herself of like, well, she was really asking for mm-hmm. it, and like it was her fault, and that would never happen to me because I'm more careful than that. And then
I was just gonna
of,
say that her whole identity around this is centered on this could never happen to me because I am so much blah blah blah.
Yeah, it's like a self-protection thing mm-hmm. to keep your own fear at bay of like, well, I can control this, I just won't like get drunk and go to a party with a bunch of guys, where it's like, you know, women can get sexually assaulted in like any situation, mm-hmm. any level of sobriety, like it's just a constant threat. But I think there is this self-protective thing in telling yourself that like, oh, I can control it, I can not act this certain way, and then it won't happen to me.
Right.
There's a character like her on The Handmaid's Tale. She's the wife, the blonde woman. She's really statuesque. Do you know what I'm talking about? And she like
Serena
helped.
Joy.
Yeah, she like helped put the whole plan together. But then she got kind of sidelined because she's a woman. Remember this
mm-hmm.
part of The Handmaid's Tale? It reminded me of that a bit.
Yeah, you want to believe it can't happen to you,
right.
and you want to like align yourself with the patriarchy,
mm-hmm.
and that's what we see with all these women who voted for Trump too. It's like
yeah.
white women. It's
white
more.
Ladies. Let's see.
Yeah. they think it's to their benefit to align with the patriarchy and the white men in power, but like it really hurts you in the end.
Mm-hmm.
They're not on your side. And then the other character I wanted to talk about was Connie Britton, our fave Tammy Taylor from Friday Night Lights. She plays the dean at the medical school, and Cassie goes to kind of confront her about her role in covering this up, and she doesn't even remember the incident, or like kind of claims to not remember the incident, but again does this kind of victim blaming, like, oh well, you know, it was he said she said, we don't want to like ruin this young man's life over rumors, like that kind of shit. Mm-hmm. Which I found that scene so interesting because mm-hmm. I have seen like this in my book They Never Learn, where they go to a female dean and like report a sexual assault, and she's very dismissive, and I've had readers say like, well, a woman wouldn't do that, like that's so unrealistic, and I'm like, y'all, I literally wrote that scene after watching the documentary about campus sexual assault, the Hunting Ground, and like many, many women in that movie talk about how female university officials were a huge part of the cover-up and dismissed them in this way, and kind of were like, well, you know, you have to think about your culpability and like mm-hmm. all of this shit. Like, it's incredibly realistic. It happens right. every day.
Well, and there's an interesting moment with the dean where she says, what am I supposed to do? I get like one or two of these reports every week.
Right.
What am I going to do?
Right. It's almost like she's saying like, there's so many of them, it doesn't even matter. But it's like, that's the reason it does matter, because there are yeah. so many of them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so do we want to get into spoilery territory?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so if you haven't seen the movie, this is your warning. We're gonna like start to spoil the ending, and you do not want the ending spoiled. I actually had it spoiled for me on the internet like a year before this movie came out, and I'm still mad about it. So
that
like,
sucks. That does yeah. suck.
Please vacate so you can yes. have a pure experience watching this. Thank you for listening. Goodbye. For everyone else who's still yes. here. Okay, this fucking guy, first of all. Let's talk about this fucking guy.
Yes.
Okay, can I just say, I've been waiting to say this. The second he walked onto the screen, I was like, this guy is Jim from The Office, and this is going to be bad, because Jim yes. from The Office is bad.
He had that thing, that like tall, cute, like unassuming thing. Like, uh-huh.
Yes.
Can't be trusted.
Yeah, so she falls in with Jen from The Office, who's like so cute and funny and like a pediatric surgeon. I was like, this guy's gonna be up to some bad shit.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they have all these like cute scenes together, mm-hmm. and they're like dancing to Paris Hilton songs, and you're like, this is gonna end in disaster. I feel like even if I hadn't had that spoiled for me, just as a thriller author, I would have been like, oh, things are going too well. Oh no.
Yeah, there's this great piece in The New Yorker that Carmen Maria Machado wrote about this movie. And about Ryan, she describes him as he has charm and the tallness that people often confuse for good looks, which
yes.
I think is so good. It's like, yes,
God.
He is just tall. That's it.
Yeah, yeah, he's very tall, though. Yeah, so then, you know, she finds out that this guy was there the day that her friend was raped, like at the party. He didn't touch her. He wasn't involved, but he like stood there and watched and laughed about it and did nothing, which I think is entirely too common. I mean, it like takes all of these, like it's at a party, right? So like there are lots of witnesses.
Mm-hmm. And like, to be clear, this isn't like hearsay that she learns this. She winds up getting a video recording from Madison, who had like an old cell phone that someone had recorded mm-hmm. the assault and sent it around to some people. She discovers it and she gives it to Cassie, and Cassie watches it. The movie does not show us the footage, which I think is a really smart choice.
Yeah, thank God.
We just hear
yeah.
the sounds of it. And just from the sound, you know, you can hear his laugh. You can hear his voice. Like, he's not intervening. He is going along with it, even if he's not directly involved, he's fucking involved.
Yes.
Isn't there a thing where it's like, hey, get Ryan, and like they get him or something, or it's like you hear him, like it's like, oh, that's gonna hurt later, like yeah. there's like a thing like that.
Yeah, yeah. I did think it was a really smart choice to not show the video. We just see Cassie's face as she's
that
watching
was,
it
yeah.
and
yeah.
her reaction, and it's so devastating.
It is.
And it's like, we don't need to see this video because we can all picture it
yes.
very readily. Like, it is not difficult to imagine,
right.
which is fucked up in and of itself.
Yes.
So I thought that was a really smart decision. So then she uses this to get the guy to tell her where, so the guy who was like the actual rapist is getting married, of course, and Cassie finds out where his bachelor party is going to be from Ryan, kind of like, you know, blackmails him, mm-hmm. saying she's going to release this video and ruin his career. So he tells her where the bachelor party is, and she shows up dressed as like a sexy nurse to enact her final revenge. And it's so like just watching her walk in, and again, like I knew it was gonna happen because somebody fucking spoiled it on the internet. But I know it got spoiled too, because so like this movie was at a lot of film festivals, and there were some early viewers who were like very upset about the way that it ended and felt that it was like kind of anti-feminist or kind of, and I think that's bullshit. Like, yeah. It's making some points. Right. And I, anyway.
It was devastating when she walked in. Yes. Like you said.
Yes, absolutely like, devastating.
No, this is not going to go well.
And like, no one recognizes her. No one is even mm-hmm. really looking at her face, probably. No one even actually yeah. ordered like a stripper or whatever they think she is. They're just like, hey, there's a sexy nurse here. Cool. Mm-hmm.
So then she confronts the rapist, and like all she wants really is for him to admit that he did it. Like, she's not there to kill him. She's not there to, she just wants him to say like, I did it, or like apologizing would be nice. But I feel like what she really wants in that scene is just to hear him say like, yes, I raped her.
She's going to carve Nina on his chest. I think mm-hmm. she's going to carve the word Nina on him.
I felt like she was only going to do that because he wouldn't admit to it. Like, that was kind of the escalation. Yeah.
I think if he had been like, you know, you're right, she probably would have just been like, okay. And, like, yeah. that would have been enough. Like, and when this scene is unfolding, she is in a room alone with him. They're on a different floor from all of the other party attendees who she has drugged, we come to learn. Mm-hmm. So, like, no one can hear him screaming. She's got him handcuffed to the bed. He's like freaking out that she's doing this, but he is very firmly committed to the fact that he is a nice guy.
Uh-huh. Yep. And then when she gets on top of him to carve Nina into his chest because he wouldn't admit what he did, he kills her. He smothers her to death. It's a horrible, like, that's the one point of violence that the movie like makes us watch the whole thing, mm-hmm. which I think is like you said, Wendy, it's good. Like, if it's too triggering for people, if you're watching it at home, you can mm-hmm. fast forward through it. But I thought it was really powerful that they linger on this. They really like show how long it takes to smother someone, which is a long time. Mm-hmm.
And he's saying the whole time, I just need you to be quiet. Yeah. Just stop talking. Yeah. Like, he's
talking.
And it's like, you've done it. She's not talking. Like, he's having this panicky, like, I just need to not face this thing in myself right. moment with it, where he can't. Mm-hmm. He cannot face the person holding him accountable to what he's done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he would rather become a murderer than admit that he was a rapist. Right. Yeah. Like, that is, wow, very telling. And then the next morning, his friend, who's played the guy who played Schmidt on New Girl, which is, like, great casting. Mm-hmm. You know. So he comes in and he basically is like, he sees what has happened, and instead of being horrified, he's like, this wasn't your fault, man. And he helps him cover it up, like, which again, unfortunately, very realistic.
Yeah. So like, the emotional reaction here is so interesting, because the guy who killed her is crying. He's like, I can't mm-hmm. believe this happened to me. He's doing that like white fragility thing that white women do all the time.
That's true.
You know, and it's just like, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot. It's just so smart. It's like there's so much to unpack there.
Yes.
Yeah. And then the actual like ending of the movie, Cassie has set into, she kind of knew that it could go this way, like that she might not walk out of this place. So she set into motion this whole plan where like she sent proof to various people, like, and the police come and arrest the rapist slash now murderer at his own wedding, which is very, very satisfying to watch.
I needed that ending.
Oh my gosh. I was like so like just tense, like, oh my god, how is this film going to end? Like, is it just going to be like, and that's what happens in mm-hmm. this world, like men kill women and nothing happens to them? I was so terrified.
Yeah, I was really ready for that, and I think I was so grateful that they gave us that ending.
Yes.
No, I think like what people were upset about when people were spoiling this on Twitter to like warn people away from this movie, which is how I got spoiled. It was like they were, I don't know, like they were almost treating it like when we talk about like male authors or, right, you know, filmmakers kill off women and it's just like their fuckable corpse then, mm-hmm. and like, yeah. no one cares, which is totally not what's going on here.
No.
Like,
no.
First of all, she's very careful the way that, like, Emerald Fennell, the director, the way that she filmed this, you never see Cassie's face once she's dead. Mm-hmm. You see like her hand and mm-hmm. you see, so it's like very carefully filmed. And then the point that she's making, as far as I'm concerned, is it's like, okay, now that she's dead, now that there's a corpse, people believe her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is...
Exactly. It's like
devastatingly accurate.
It's like, what do we have to do to be believed? We have to be dead. Like, that's what you have to do to be believed. You have to leave behind a body.
Yep. Yep.
And I think that, like, the way that this final scene is unfolding, the police are showing up, and Ryan, her ex, Cassie's ex-boyfriend, is getting the series of text messages from her that she had, like, scheduled to be sent. Mm-hmm. And it's just, like, this absolutely pitch perfect end to this movie.
Yeah.
And like, she sort of, you know, explains like, here's why this happened, and then like, she signs the final message like, love Cassie and Nina. And that fucking destroyed me. Like, I just started sobbing when I was watching this movie. Like, oh my god.
Yeah
me too.
I'm so mad that I didn't get to like actually have the emotional experience of this movie, because, and I even like months later after it had already been spoiled and I'd come across it, I would like tweet about how I was looking forward to seeing it, and people would tag me and be like, do you know what this movie really is? Like, you should read this, and like link to the thread. I was just like, let people watch art and decide for themselves, especially if it's a female filmmaker making a movie like this. Like, she's not gonna do some like anti-feminist bullshit. Like, she's making a point. If you don't like it, that's one thing, but like, it's a bold artistic choice, and I wish I could have seen it unfold like you guys got to. I'm like always gonna be mad about that.
Yeah, I don't blame you at all. Like, it was very, very powerful. I'm like getting emotional just thinking about
me
that
too
scene.
Yeah, I keep having like chills talking about it, and this is like even after I felt like I was a little numb watching it because I was like waiting for the thing to happen. And
I felt like there was this thing at the end where the filmmaker was saying, okay, so when Nina died, you know, Cassie was the one to speak out on Nina's behalf, you know, now Cassie is dead. And I almost felt like the film was like handing it to viewers to be like, what will you do for mm-hmm. these women who have died or who have mm-hmm. had this happen to them? You know, I really felt like this was such a successful communication tool.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's going to make a lot of men feel really uncomfortable, and they should feel really uncomfortable. And women too, you know, because like we have to, like we've been talking this whole time about how we as women are complicit in the patriarchy and in rape mm-hmm. culture and everything. And the movie really gets at that as well, with Alison Brie's character and Connie Britton's character. And even like Cassie's obsession, like the fact that she can't let this go and this has completely taken over her life. It's a lot to unpack. I feel like we could talk about it for days and days. I need like a whole college course on this. It's so amazing.
Also, I really want to mention the look of the movie.
Way
it's sort of like,
thank you.
It's like during the day, it's like this pastel, pale pink and blue mm-hmm. sort of bubblegummy world. And mm-hmm. Cassie has like a very like, you know, early 2000s Britney Spears hair. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then when she goes out at night, like the color palette shifts and everything is like super garish. It's just like mm-hmm. so much went into all of that. It's really, really, really adds to the experience of watching it.
Yeah. I was thinking mm-hmm. about that the whole time, like all the scenes in the cafe, it's all this like kind of cotton candy hipster color scheme, mm-hmm. you know, very like, I don't know, what's a good word for it? Like one of those like Technicolor apps, you know, that like filters everything into really like chromatic shades.
Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like girly. It's like overtly feminine,
soft
in an interesting
also,
way.
Also like, mm-hmm. like the decor in, Cassie's parents' house where she lives, like it's very mm-hmm. it's very frilly and feminine
mm-hmm.
it's just
all of it, so it's like good. Almost like an Instagram like account, like the way that they have it so color themed throughout the day and the night scenes, like you said. And the night scenes are really like you know when you see shots of like Amsterdam's red light district and it looks mm-hmm. like that, like the when you see stuff that's filmed there, it kind of has that sort of vibe to it.
Yeah. Oh, so good.
So good.
Anyway, that is Promising Young Woman. It's available to rent on Amazon and other places. And I mean, we highly recommend it. I would say you need to be in like a certain emotional place to watch it. But we're all in a terrible emotional place right now.
Right.
And we may never get out of it. So just watch it anyway.
Yeah, I feel like we should all watch it and like remember that if Alison Brie's character watched this movie, she would be like, that's terrible.
Yeah.
I would never. And we have to like really examine ourselves and see where we've been complicit, because we are. Like, there have to be ways and things that we can be more aware of.
For sure.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, that is a good point.
That's it for this episode of Unlikable Female Characters. Don't forget to subscribe, and you can also follow us on Twitter at UnlikableFCPod for updates, book recommendations, and angry feminist rants. Our website is unlikablefemalecharacters.com, and we're also on Instagram at UnlikableFemaleCharacters. Thanks for listening.